Welcome back to another episode of Hot Pizza Ass. I'm your host, Erin Darling Terralva, and today on Latina Equal Pay Day, I am joined by special guest Gloria Calderon Kellett, who is an actor, a writer, a producer, and she is the co-EP showrunner of One Day at a Time, which is a great show that you guys should all check out if you're not familiar. She's also a very outspoken advocate about diversity and inclusion. She's involved in the End Latin Exclusion movement that's going on right now. And we had this whole conversation at 8:30 a.m., so she really is a rock star. Thank you so much, Gloria. Before we get into this amazing episode, I would like to read a user or listener review. From FeatherGirl77, the title is Love Everything About This. Erin gives, honestly, a new level in this genuine look at life. She's smart, funny, and unapologetically real. She's a great host and brings topics from all aspects that need to be heard. She's both enlightening and entertaining, and I look forward to every episode. Thank you so much, FeatherGirl77. That is an amazing review. And if you guys would like to take a second to review this podcast, totally free, easiest way to support us, and it's how we grow and find new listeners. Please take the time to do that if you guys get anything out of Hot Pizza Ass. Without further ado, here's the episode. Gloria, thank you so much for joining us on Hot Pizza Ass. I really admire you for so many reasons, but we'll get into that later. I kind of want to start off with a quote from you. It's one of my favorite quotes ever. And that quote is, I'm making white man money now, y'all. And I love this. And I listened to the panel that you did where you said this last night. And I couldn't help but wonder if a man had said, I'm being paid appropriately, if it would have been in all of the trades like it was when you said it. And I'm just wondering what your perspective was, because I remember that blew up. I saw it on every blog the next day.
It was really interesting because we are still fighting so many fights for equality across the board. I mean, Hollywood is just a little bubble, but I think what does happen in this bubble affects everything else. So when I have this platform now where people are listening to what I have to say, I think I really try to be thoughtful in talking about things that seem to me ridiculous that it's a big deal like that. And yet, you know, I think Latina Equal Pay Day is this week and we're making 55 cents on the dollar to what a white man makes in this country today in 2020, which is lunacy. So it was really important for me that when my announcement was made last year, I said I would like it to be right around Latina Equal Pay Day, because I want to let women know and let Latinas know in particular that we are worth more than what we're constantly told. And a lot of times I think what happens is we get in situations where we start to believe somebody else's narrative about us. And we have to put an end to it. And I think the way to do that is to be lifting each other up, to be calling things out, to be seeking, you know, seeing injustice and saying that's not okay. So that's what that moment was about, was me saying, like, I am now being paid what I'm worth. Mm-hmm. and everyone should be.
Yes, 1,000,000%. And actually, I saw a statistic yesterday on a Loose Collective that said that Latinas in high wage occupations, meaning that they pay over 100K per year annually, they said 58 cents compared to white men. And what do you think that we need to do in the entertainment industry to really close that wage gap? Like, it seems like there hasn't been that much progress, but there's been a lot of conversation. How do we actually make this happen?
I think calling it out. I think we have to call it out. And I also think that we really have to start truly and thoughtfully fighting for more representation, standing up for ourselves. I think for a long time, we were so grateful to be in the room. We were so grateful to have the opportunity. And that gratitude has not gone away for one moment for me, right? I'm still like pinching myself that I get to do this as a job, that I'm hanging out with Norman Lear, that Rita Moreno texts me. All of it is still exciting and like, what is life, right? However, I have something to offer and I have something to bring to the table. And so when I was just sitting in gratitude and nothing else, I was allowing their narrative to affect me. I was allowing the narrative of she should just be happy she's here to affect me. And that's not true. We should all be happy that everyone is here and we should all be listening to one another and we should all be respectful of one another's lived experience. And I think that with this election, with so many things that are happening, I think that I'm really trying to reach out specifically to women and specifically to women of color to say, our time of just sitting in gratitude is over. Now we say, thank you. But like, let's do stuff. Let's get to work. Let's be respectful. Treat me with respect. Like all of that can be true at the same time. Mm-hmm. We can be grateful and still demand respect. We can be grateful and still fight for our rights, for our equality. And so I can see where it came from, but we have to evolve from it and we have to demand more of ourselves as we're insisting on the evolution of others. We also have to demand more of ourselves to stand up for it daily.
Last week, a huge thing happened, the whole end Latin exclusion. And I know that this is something you've been super, super vocal about. And I definitely want to take a moment to acknowledge that and to talk about what that means and what that movement means to you personally, and really what the goals are. Like, what do you want to see out of this?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that really want to help. I think that I would say the vast majority of people that I talk to and that I interact with are like, I don't know what to do. I'm a white dude. I want to help, but I'm supposed to listen and I don't know what to do. Right. So it was really, it was pitching season and kind of what got us all talking about it was the same things that happen every year started to happen. And in terms of who's buying what and what projects are being brought to us. And we're like, you know, maybe we can lay a template so that those who are wanting to help can have a guide of actionable items that they can participate in to be part of the solution. So it was a letter that was formed by so many women in this wonderful group. I'm in the ULP, the Untitled Latinx Project. I had very little to do with the writing of the letter. That was the great minds of so many of the women in this room. I just would read it and give thoughts. But it was 4 months in the making. It was really being thoughtful about how it was written. It was really being thoughtful and intentional about the timing of the letter because we didn't want to be drafting off of any of the BLM work that was being done. And so we found that, you know, it was Latinx Heritage Month and we get 1 month a year. And so at the end of it, let's say, hey, how about until the next time we're celebrated, here are some things you can do. And so that's really where it came from. I think that for us, it's to follow up now that the letter has been out, it's following up with studios and networks and agencies and management companies to encourage them to abide by the tenets of that letter, of things that they can do to be part of the solution. So that's the next step is following up on the actionable items and making sure people are taking action and not just talking. And the talking is the amount of panels I've been doing my whole career. We talk about the same stuff again and again. And at some point you're just like, what? I don't know that I'm going to, I really was like, I'm not sure I'm going to do panels anymore. I don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Are we just talking to talk? I don't know what we're doing. Like if it's like, hey guys, after this, you guys are going to do these two things or something. I just want a little bit more action to be happening. And so the thing that I really appreciated about the letter is here's actionable stuff you can do.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the landscape in entertainment is changing a little bit. Like we're starting to see it. I feel like you're a big part of that. Your show, like the representation that we're seeing, it's still not enough, but I feel like it is slowly getting better. I wish there was a way to expedite the process a little bit more.
I know. Girl, same.
Right. I want to hear about your experiences as a Latina, like coming up in the entertainment world. What were the challenges that you faced? Can you tell me about your story? Oh, and by the way, I didn't know you went to LMU. I went there too for 2 years. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. So my journey is, so I'm the daughter of Cuban immigrants. That's like such a huge fingerprint on who I am as a person that I always have to start with that. My parents are really exceptional and loving and wonderful human beings. And I'm really fortunate that, that I got them in this life. Their hard work and determination and dedication to family and to making sure that I had freedom of speech is something that I carry with me in everything that I do. So they came here, they were in Miami for a year, and then they moved with a bunch of other Cuban families to Portland, Oregon. The Cuban diaspora is very spread out over this country, which is super interesting. So I grew up in like a little Cuban community, but also obviously very surrounded by just dominant culture white people that were lovely to us. My upbringing was lovely. Oregon was lovely to us. Portland was a really sweet place to grow up and very green. And then we went on a spring break trip when I was in seventh grade to San Diego, and my parents were like, this is like Cuba. And they fell in love with it. And they sat my brother and I down, and they were like, what do you think about moving to San Diego? And I was all in. And so was my brother. So we moved a week before my freshman year of high school. I became a Southern California girl. And I went to LMU, where you went as well. And then I found writing my senior year at LMU. I was an actor, and something happened my senior year where I had an idea for a play and I submitted it to the Playwrights Festival. And the idea, I was never nervous as an actor. As a writer, I was so nervous, and it woke something up in me. Using my voice, speaking, being funny, it was something that I was like, oh my gosh, I found this thing. And the Playwrights Festival was in May, my senior year. And I was like, oh, I blew it. Like, I found this thing and now I'm graduating. Like, what, this is, I didn't get to study this thing. So I decided to go to grad school. So I went to the University of London, and I had a performance and playwriting master's degree. I worked at the Royal Court. I worked in pubs. I had the most glorious time in London. I will probably die in London. I will probably live there in my end days. And then when I came back here, it was like, oh, I have this master's degree in playwriting. Like, nobody in LA cares. And I was fortunate enough to, a friend from Loyola found out I was looking for work, for just like entry level assistant work. And he was working at Cruz Wagner, and he got me a meeting with to work for Cameron Crowe. And that was my first big Hollywood job, was working for Cameron, who was lovely to me and so supportive. And I got to write all day, and I just had to sign for packages and answer the phone and whatever they needed, you know. And then after that, I just started, it was actually Cameron who was like, you know, you write short plays, like sitcom might be what you like. That's kind of like a play that's shot. Mm-hmm. You should write a spec. And I was like, what's a spec? I didn't know anything. And so I started going to the Museum of TV and Radio, which is now the Paley Center. And this is before Hulu, this is before YouTube, you know, like to see an old TV show, you couldn't unless it was on like Nick at Night. Mm-hmm. So at the Paley Center, I was able to break down scripts, and I became sort of self-taught in how to write a TV teleplay. And then I started applying to the programs. I got into the Fox program, and they put me through writer's boot camp. So that was the first like official writing for TV class I ever took ever. And then I started putting up plays because I thought that's my superpower. Like, I have to sit with like, what's my superpower right now? And putting up plays was that. And so I started putting up plays at the Hudson Avenue Theater on Santa Monica Boulevard. I was doing stand-up as well. I mean, I was like really out there trying everything. And I'm a hustler, you know? So I'd be doing stand-up. I'd be working for Cameron. I'd be running errands. I'd be writing plays. I'd be like, it was all of the things at the same time. And I found this Black Box Theater. I did a 15-woman monologue show because I was told, every time I did stand-up, I was told women aren't funny. And I'm like, I think they are. So I wrote a 15-woman funny monologue show. I cast it. I directed it. And then I went to all my favorite charities, and I gave them free tickets to opening night, and I gave the actors free tickets to opening night. And then I found out that Backstage West and LA Weekly will review your show if you have a 6-week run. So I found out that Hudson Avenue is dark on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Like, there's nothing in there. And so I'm like, how much for Tuesday or Wednesday nights? Nothing, like $175, like so cheap. They're like, there's a set in there. I'm like, I don't care. And I would book 6 Tuesdays in a row, put out my press release, get the actors, So the opening night were sold out, but then the rest of the run, we had a line around the block to get in to see the show because it was only a 99 seat theater. So we packed it in. And those shows, so I did that. I did in the first show I did was In Her Shoes. The second show I did was Baggage. The third show I did was Skirts and Flirts, which I took off Broadway. And that's how I got my agent, my manager. They came. I think their assistants came first and then they came. And that's really what started the journey for me. And so it was like deep hustle. It was every day waking up. What am I doing today to do this thing? What am I doing today to do this thing? And it worked.
Deep hustle. I like that. I've heard of deep work, but deep hustle, like that's a movement. That's very cool. I read on Wikipedia that you worked with Cameron on Vanilla Sky, which
the post of Vanilla Sky.
Okay, so that is the movie that made me want to be an actor. When Cameron Diaz has the meltdown in the car with Tom Cruise and she's flipping out, I'm like, oh my god, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Amazing. I love that movie. I just think that's so great that you worked on that. And so I love this story of kind of like, you know, really committing to the work and really getting into it and absolutely having that payoff at the end. But once you got, you know, started getting your agent and your first like writing jobs and stuff like that, did you experience challenges or hurdles like in those rooms? Like, was it gender equal? Were you like, oh, what was that like?
Definitely there were challenges, but I would say like, look, it's just hard to be a TV writer, period, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a hard industry to get into. So I think that, you know, I have white passing privilege. So the amount of spaces that I enter would be easy. It's easier for me to enter them than it would be for somebody that looks more indigenous or is darker skinned. That's just the facts. And a lot of these rooms I was able to blend or became sort of innocuous. Was there some racism and some sexism? Yes, of course there was, sadly. But there was also kindness in every room I was in. Kindness, somebody, one or two or three or several people that were on my side that were trying to, that were there for me if I needed to bitch and complain or needed guidance. And so all of them were worthwhile experiences that I'm glad I went through, truly. And I really try to, because people want to talk a lot about the trauma. And I think the thing that we have to focus on is what got us through, more so than the trauma. And so I would say that there were years that there was trauma that I had to work through, but by and large, the amount of kindness and support that I found was overwhelmingly positive, so that I could continue the path. So I could keep going and learn and grow and get better. Because the truth is, some of the things that happened in those spaces affected me and affected my performance. And so I really want to urge people to work through so that their performance doesn't suffer. Because if it does, then they win, because then they're proving themselves right. Mm-hmm. And so it took me a long time to realize that I needed to not believe other people's stories about me. I needed to believe my own story about myself. Because the moment I would fall in the trap of, they don't think I'm very good, oh, I must not be very good, then I'm buying into their story. And I'm the storyteller. So I can make a better story and live that story. And I think once I really unlocked that, something shifted for me. And I was able to really live in my power so much more. And that's when like opportunities like One Day at a Time came to me.
Yeah. And by the way, an amazing show. Culturally super important. I think I saw last night on Twitter that it was also mentioned on This Is Us.
I know. How nice is that?
I mean, how does that make you feel?
Oh my gosh. I tweeted at the writers. I was like, who did this? This is so nice. That's so nice.
Yeah. I think a lot of people really love the show and love kind of like your take on it and what it has become. Creating, developing that show in a way that has your voice, that has the representation, and also jumping from multiple networks. What has all that been like?
It's madness. I mean, it doesn't get to happen. So I feel like we really got to live through something. You know, Norman's book, his favorite quote is, even this I get to experience. And it's true. It's like, wow, we're like, who gets to go through this? It's great. Great shows are canceled all the time. the fact that ours was canceled and it was such a ruckus is very meaningful, because it means that the work that we did worked. It meant something to people, and that's all we wanted. So that in and of itself was so lovely. And you know, I do keep fighting, and we have a studio that keeps fighting. Sony's been very good to us in terms of continuing to try to make the show. They see the importance of it. So it means a lot. It means a lot when fans reach out and when it's been meaningful in an emotional way to people. So we did what we set out to do. We made 46 great episodes. I hope to make more, but if we don't, it's been such a beautiful and gift. It's just been a gift. The whole thing's been a gift.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, what's it like working with Rita Moreno? Like, she's amazing. I love her.
It's amazing. She's really, you know, she's 88 years old. She's going to be 89 in December. She is funny and quick, and she's a really layered woman that, you know, when you take away the celebrity, which she's been a celebrity all of her life. So it's hard because she walks around obviously as Rita Moreno, but there's a really, really tender soul in there. And she's been through a lot. If people haven't read her book, boy, read her book. Actually, listen to the audio version because she reads it and it's pretty remarkable. But that woman has been through a lot. She has fought the fights that for us to sit here, right? So it's a pleasure. It's been a real pleasure to have worked with her and to have made this character with her. You know, it's Lydia Rieta is the actual name of my grandmother. It's my grandmother's maiden name. So, who has passed away and who was an incredible force in my life. So the wig that she wears is my mother's hairdo. So she's a mix of my mother and my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And to have been able to put that out there and to have people see the delight and the warmth and the humor and the vanity and all of that of that makes my mother and my grandmother, it's a celebration of these two women. And so to have Rita play it so beautifully has been, again, a complete gift.
That's wonderful. Do you find it difficult to base characters based on family members?
I think early on, I think like 20 years ago, it was tricky, but now it's my interpretation. And also it always takes on a life of its own. You know, like as much as Lydia is my mom and grandma, it's also my mom and grandma and Rita. You know, it's all, and as much as Penelope is me, it's also Justina. You know, so it's like they morph, it morphs, and then it becomes something else for the storyline. So there's things that are grounded in reality, but there's also plenty that is made up for fun. And so I think that you have to, what's more funny to me is family members who are like, is that based on me? And it's like, no, it's never who they think they're based on. It's great.
Really?
Oh my God. I have some people that I'm like, that's based on them. And I wonder if they know if it's based on them, and they don't think so, which is fabulous.
That's so great. I love that. I was listening to a podcast appearance that you did where you're speaking at, I think, DePaul University. And there was a moment that really resonated with me where you kind of mentioned that you felt at times that you maybe weren't worthy if you weren't blonde or 100 pounds, which is, you know, I can relate to that a lot. And I just kind of wanted to know, like, is that an experience that you still experience at this level of success? Or is that something that you felt early in your career, the need to conform to white male marketing industry of beauty?
It was really more early on. And I'll tell you when it shifted. When it shifted is when I realized that the people that were telling me my stories all my life were 50-year-old white guys. Mm-hmm. The moment that it was like, wait a minute. These are the people that have been telling me how to think and feel about myself? Oh no, 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 hell no. No, I don't care what they think, right? It's that they were creating the narratives. And so because they were creating the narratives, they led me to believe that there was a certain thing that I needed to be, and that thing is not true. That's not the reality. So, you know, now I'm more, I'm like, oh, I'm writing and I'm sitting in a room all day and I'm, you know, I need to like get up and move my body because I'm going to just morph into a slug that writes. So it's that, it's more that, it's more for health. It's more like, oh, my hip hurts. I need to move more. Like it's that. it's more that now than it's more honestly for health than it is for any standard that they misled me for most of my childhood. And then it's correcting that with my own children. And what's great is the shows that my kids watch are so different than the stuff that I grew up watching. So I think that it is correcting itself because there's so much more diversity now in kids shows in particular. I mean, they're amazing. The kids space is so inclusive. It's awesome. You know, like it's Vampira is a story about immigration. You know, those are both my friend Chris Nee makes both of those, and they're beautiful. You know, they're beautiful shows. And my daughter watches a ton of anime. There's LGBTQ characters. It's great. It's Steven Universe and Korra and Legend of Korra and all of that is so much more inclusive than the stuff I was brought up on.
I love that.
She-Ra has a girlfriend.
I mean, really?
Yes. She-Ra is gay, y'all. My She-Ra was gay. My She-Ra was tiny and blonde.
I need to start watching this. Speaking of which, what are your favorite shows to watch right now? Like,
God. My favorite comedy is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I say it all the time. I'm obsessed. It's so fun. That is really a show that I'd be so mad if I was Dan Gore because it's so good. I don't know how it's not winning every award. It's so excellent. It is excellent comedy. So good. I loved The Good Place. You know, I'm a big Mike Schur fan. What else do I watch? I just finished watching Sherlock again because it's just so good. Loved Fleabag, obviously. Love Insecure. Right now I'm watching Call Your Agent, which is a French show. It's very, very funny and charming. Or Call My Agent. Call Your Agent, Call My Agent. One of those. You can look it up on Netflix. those are kind of the big ones right now.
Nice. Something that I think is so great about you that I really admire about you is that I feel like you do such a great job of like creating a community. And, you know, everyone that's listening should follow her on Twitter. You're a great Twitter follow. And you give your time, like your spare time, to answer questions or to help people or to kind of like provide some illumination on this dark path of like trying to navigate the entertainment world and stuff like that. Why is that so important to you?
Because I didn't have anybody early on. I didn't know anybody in Hollywood. It was just such a scary world. And I at least lived in Los Angeles, right? So that was already a leg up, but I kind of didn't even know where to start. So the idea that Twitter, which is such a hellscape, can be used for good, can be used as a means of connection and as a means of, hey, if there's something and I have a minute, I'll answer your question about formatting or about pitching or about, sure. I love that connection. You know, I taught at Loyola. I was a professor at Loyola, and that's how I met a lot of my writers that I hired. And I really love that one-on-one connection. And it was one of the things that I know as I get older, I will go back to teaching eventually when I have time and energy again, because there's something that is really beautiful about the connection and trying to help somebody on their journey and trying to save them time. If I could go back, I could save myself 2 to 5 years easily with just what I know. And so if I can save somebody else 2 to 5 years, I want to do that. So that's why I have my 101 series. I did a Hollywood 101. There's 11 episodes on YouTube. It's free. It's a masterclass that kind of breaks down what I would talk to somebody about. When I used to do coffees with writers. I don't have time to do that anymore, but I used to try to do one-on-one coffees. And this is sort of an amalgam of all of the coffees that I've been on, and it's broken up into 11 parts. We break down the one day at a time pilot. I have Mike on and we break it down in great detail and talk about how we broke that pilot. And there's so many other, you know, episodes where I really talk about everything that I could think of. So people, check it out. It's free.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes so you guys can see it. But on that tip, what are some of the best ways that someone can just save 2 to 3 years of time?
I think people have to get an agent. Mm-hmm. I think that they think that that's something that's not necessary. And look, to be fair, are there people who have been able to make strides without having an agent? There are. It's just few and far between. So maybe you're one of those people, and great if you're able to find work without one. But by and large, I can't read writers that are not represented, mm-hmm. right? I can't. So you have to put time and energy, and I would say with deep focus, every day trying to find a way, trying to, you know, do contests, trying to get into programs, trying to submit to festivals, trying to all of that stuff, whatever that takes. If you're like, oh, I don't have a spec, well, then write your spec. Oh, I don't have a short film. Well, then shoot something on your phone and edit it and submit it to a festival. Like, all of those things will only add to your overall packet. People have to make something that catches fire. That is the way that you start to make it through the industry. What I did that caught fire was my play. When I put that play up and we had that line around the block, that was something that worked, that caught fire. And that's when they came to me. I didn't have to do mailers or submit to anything. I had managers and agents coming to the shows to see me. So that's the thing. You want to be so undeniable that they come to you. And so how do you do that? And figuring out what that superpower is, how you can access it, how you can reach out. I also think that people need to, if you're a writer and you're an actor, you need to be in class. If you're not in class, then if you don't have money right now, I feel not having money. Okay. That was me. You can get on Zoom every week with your friends and read a play out loud, mm-hmm. read a script out loud and give each other thoughts and notes, or do a scene, or you wrote 10 pages and you're going to read it with your friends and hear what it sounds like on Zoom. All of that is free and you can do it. You just have to organize and you have to be proactive. That's all stuff you can do right now to get better. Because a lot of times people are writing in a bubble. I understand that what writers want more than anything is for people to read their work. Nobody has time to read anything. We don't have time to read anything. Are you kidding me? So you need to find peers to read your stuff. You need to read stuff out loud with peers. You need to hear it out loud because hearing it is so helpful. And you need to be rewriting, because if one day, I think what happens a lot of times, because people are always wanting me to read stuff and I'm like, I don't know what you guys think I can do. I can't get anybody an agent. Believe me, I can't get my assistant an agent. I've tried. So I think what they want is they want somebody to read them and say, it's good, right? Don't be an asshole. If you don't need somebody to read your stuff to tell you it's good, get good and get better. An agent is the one that can properly send you out for appropriate stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that's also my big beef when writers, I know how busy writers are, especially showrunners, when they go and give their time on a panel, they're giving an hour of their time out of their day, which an hour is really three, because they're driving there, they're doing the panel, they're driving back to their thing. That's 3 hours away from their work. Mm-hmm. Anybody who goes up to them after they've just given you an hour and says, will you read my script? Guys, that's a dick move. Don't be that person. Don't be that person. They've given you the gift. The gift was the hour. You can say, I'd love to work with you one day. I hope one day that our paths cross. You can totally do that. You can have your agent submit material to them after. But most of the time, writers aren't reading unless they're staffing. Writers are writing. They got their stuff to write too. And right now I have 5 things in development. Are you kidding? I can't read. I can't have something else go in my brain. I'm writing 5 different things because writing is actually my job, not doing all the other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that there's like courtesy. I think there's kindness. I think there's decency that holds people back. Mostly I think people need to be accountable for themselves and take responsibility for their actions. So often I meet writers who are like, my agent doesn't do anything. I'm like, well, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Are you calling them? Are you giving them stuff? The amount of times, honestly, that I've loved a writer, I have a Excel spreadsheet of writers that I read when I'm staffing. Okay. And sometimes I think they're good, but they're not right for one day at a time. But I'm like, oh, but if I ever do a relationship thing, I want to check in on them. So I had a pilot at CBS. It was a rom-com. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go back and revisit because I have time right now. I've turned everything in. So I have time right now. I'm going to see what people are up to. And I'd call agents and say, oh my God, what's the new piece that so-and-so has? And they send me the same material I got 3 years ago. I'm like, there's nothing new. Nope. Not for me. Can't do it. 3 years and you haven't written a new sample. How do when you're on staff with me, you have 1 week to write a script. 1 week. Mm-hmm. You haven't written anything new for 3 years? Bye. Gotta be writing new stuff, y'all. Write. Get better. That's how it's gotta be. Act proactive. No joke. Get on it.
I love this. This is fantastic. It's making my day.
I want to make hundreds of thousands of dollars for a living, but I can't be bothered to write a new script in 3 years. No, y'all, come on.
Right. Come on.
Think about it. Think about it. You got to hustle. New. Right. Come on. That's going to be the clip, isn't it? It's going to be me like a crazy person saying right.
I would love it. I mean, this is a fan. If that's the clip, I'm fantastically pleased with that. Other than that, what are some other mistakes that you see people make other than maybe approaching someone in an inappropriate time, asking for more than that particular person can give energetically or time-wise, and not writing new material? Is there anything else that's like a no-no for anyone that's up and coming?
I mean, those are kind of the big ones for me. Is there anything you're thinking of that I can comment on?
How about social media? Like reaching out on social media to people that they don't.
Don't ask me to read a script on social media. Are you kidding me? No, I just don't respond. I just roll my eyes and go, no, y'all, I'm giving you this hour right now. You can't ask me to read a script on social media. You can ask me a question about, I'm having trouble with an agent. What do I do? I have writer's block, Gloria. How do you deal with writer's block? Like that kind of stuff is fine. But asking to read a script, you need to have your peers. You need to get a peer group together to read your script. You need to get better and better. And I'll tell you the other thing too. There have been times 10 years ago, okay? 10 years ago where I'd feel bad and somebody would say, will you read the script? And then I read the script and it's bad. Then what? You think I'm gonna read a second script? I'm not. And then I'm the asshole because I have to then try to, I don't know, tell them that it's not good without telling them it's not good. It's, unless you're staffing, guys, you don't need a showrunner to read your script right now. You need agents to read your script. You need to get representation. Mm-hmm. You need them to love it. And then you need them to make sure that they're putting it out there and getting executives to read your script. That's what you need.
Right.
You need to be going out there and meeting executives and buyers. The showrunner should be the last person that reads your script. And that's after it's gone through multiple drafts.
What about actors? Do actors hit you up and ask?
They do.
Want to be on your show?
Yeah, they do. They do. And that, I mean, you know, that's also just not how it's done, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, here's the thing. Because of my years of theater and years of being in this industry, I'm writing now so that I can put people on the show who've been working with me for free for 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. Todd Grinnell, who plays Schneider, was in my plays for a decade. Right.
Awesome.
So that's, and then a lot of the guest parts are you have to look at the show too and say, how many guest parts are on this show? One Day at a Time does not have a lot of guest cast. So when we do have guest cast, mostly we're writing for somebody. Mm-hmm. And if we're not, it's like two lines and it's going to be something that we task our casting department to do. So really you want to be having them filter your material because it's always something super, super, super specific. So it's not just like, put me on as the cousin. It's like, well, I'm not writing about a cousin. And if I did write about a cousin, then I'm probably going to try to either stunt cast it or cast somebody from my circle mm-hmm. Who's been hustling with me for the last 20 years. Right. So, people need to be, that's not the way to do it. It's not the professional way to do it.
Yeah, I feel like a re-emerging theme in this conversation is just like, you know, really like hustle and hustle the old school way.
Yeah, I think it's hustle and I think it's just get so good they can't ignore you in other ways. I mean, I'm fans of a lot of people that I've never been able, like Harvey Guillen, I'm dying to put Harvey in the show. I just have nothing for him, right? Like there's people who I'm dying to put on in my stuff and I don't have room for them right now.
Yeah.
So I think that like make friends with writers too. Make friends with writers and say, I'll read anything. I'll go on Zoom and I'll read any part you want me to play. And just because it'll make you better as an actor and it'll be helpful to them and maybe they'll start writing for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I feel like this conversation is going to give a lot of people inspiration information and a lot of sass, you know.
Gotta get in there.
I love it. Yes. Well, thank you so much. I don't want to keep you from the rest of your day, but you know, I hope to work with you one day, Gloria.
Yes.
You're a badass. And
as are you. Thank you for doing this and thanks for asking.
Thank you again to Gloria for joining the podcast, for sharing her knowledge and spreading some love here on Latina Equal Pay Day. I feel like a better person after listening to that. I don't know about you guys. I know it's my podcast, but sometimes I just really like the episodes, and this is one of my favorites. If you love this as well, please take a second to send it to someone who would benefit from this information and consider leaving us a review on iTunes. It really helps the podcast out a lot. If you would like to support further, go to patreon.com/ErinDarling, where you will find ways to support the podcast financially, but you'll also get a lot of cool bonus content in exchange for it. Thank you guys so much for listening to Hot Pizza Ass. Please check out the show notes for more resources. Love you guys. Be well. Stay safe.